On this episode of The Autumn Windbags, Rory Parsons returns for the first time in forever. I imagine it's because the preseason is here, so we talk about what we expect from the Seahawks facing off against the Raiders this Saturday. The starting lineup is starting to come together, so we start piecing together what that means specifically for the defensive backs. It sounds like the suits are going to be in lawsuits, more front office problems that we got to talk about. And, of course, Rory's grinder, because we got to. Also, make sure to go to www.manscaped.com using promo code WINBAGS for 20% off and free shipping worldwide. And we love that you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. There it is! Caught! Touchdown!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto.
Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, and wait, what? What? I'll be damned. That's Rory's music. Oh, God. Rory is back.
God, I got to stand up for this.
You got to stand up. I'm about to say, get on your feet, son.
Oh, Rory back in the house.
It's good to see you, boys.
Wow.
It's good to see
you. Back in the autumn with the prodigal son returns.
Look what the cat threw up.
You still pissed that we kicked your ass in 1776? Is that why it took so long for you to come back, Rory?
I'm fucking furious. I'm still furious. Deliver some fucking nightmares.
It still steams.
Welcome back.
A little.
What do we owe the pleasure? Is it because like preseason's underway this week? You just missed us so bad. Soto talking about manscaping is nuts. And you're like, hey, I got to see this for myself. Like, what happened?
Number one, I definitely want some manscaping products. I'm getting hairy as fuck down there. Okay. Number two, I'm sick of texting you boys. Honestly, I text you boys every day about Raiders shit. And you're like, come on the podcast. All right, I'm in. Let's do it.
Well, that's I think, how every proper podcast should be. Like, we've been on the same text chain for like 7 years now. Nothing but Raiders. Literally nothing but Raiders. Like, when you told me like what you did for a living for like 45 seconds, it was the weirdest thing in the world. Like, why aren't we talking about like how we missed Alden Smith and how Derek Carr's you know, the franchise quarterback.
How does that relate?
This is how this podcast got started. It's literally just like a YouTube podcast version of our text chain. Where it's
without the dick and fart jokes and all the tit, the big booty chicks that I sent to you guys.
Yeah. We definitely get canceled if our text chain was online.
Yeah. Like that's the beauty of a text chain. Like that's what I always said about like for those, you know, who don't watch the UFC, but like Derek Lewis's Instagram, I always say is like, the text chain between your boys that you're afraid to put on social media because it's just like so grotesque and will get you fired. That's our text chain. And this is like the R-rated version, not the NC-17 version, just the regular R-rated version.
Okay. So how big of a fucking big dick move was Cyril Gane when he comes out to Paul Wall and just trolls the entire fucking state of fucking Texas?
Comes out to, so for those who don't watch, Derek Lewis fought for the interim title against Cyril Gane. Derek Lewis is from Houston. The fight was in Houston. And Cyril Gane, the Frenchman, comes out to a Houston rapper in his walkout music. The whole arena, I was there in Houston working the fights. The whole arena gets up because they think it's going to be Derek Lewis. And then Cyril Gane's French ass comes strolling in. And everyone's like, oh, damn it.
And then the next day he posts a picture of like a beaten down fucking Derek Lewis and he's like, be okay. And for people who don't know, Derek Lewis posts some like people just getting annihilated, doing tons of weird shit. And he always posts, he's okay.
Don't worry.
Oh God. That was fucking hilarious.
So that's all the UFC talk for today's show. Loving the jersey in the background there, Rory. Is that up there just to make Soto like go on tilt? Like, are you trying to give him an aneurysm having a Derek Carr jersey there, knowing how much he hates him?
That's actually you, dog. That's
my man.
That's definitely a you thing, man. I've had this
get
jersey.
Him wet.
My boss actually bought me this jersey, so I can't even claim that I bought it, but honestly, I've always had respect for Derek Carr. I like Derek Carr. I rock that jersey whenever I go to a Raider game. It's just
nice.
Yeah.
The quarterback of your team is the most like your boss or your grandma's jersey purchase. Like, oh, just give him the quarterback, right? Like, you know, you've got like it's an awesome friend and they'll give you like an Ingold jersey, you know, or like a, I don't know, like a
It's the classics.
Yeah.
You got to get the classics, exactly. Man.
Bo Jackson, Howie Long. Those are the big two. Marcus Allen.
Yep.
Like Charles Woodson, guys. Man.
Charles Woodson. Woodson, yeah. Out of those four, Woodson would be the fourth because he played for the fucking another team. The other guy, well, Marcus is third because he played for another team. Bo and Howie, bam, bam. Raiders, bam. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're only 33 days away from opening day for the Las Vegas Raiders. 1 month and 2 days away from primetime Monday Night Football, Baltimore Ravens coming to Allegiant Stadium. First actual game with fans, 33 days away. I can taste it. But first, we've got camp, and we've got our first preseason game this Saturday. Seattle Seahawks coming to Las Vegas, first preseason game. The UFC does, or I'm talking UFC earlier. This the guy. NFL does such a great job of just like building a crescendo to the season, because it starts with like the draft and you get all pumped on it. And then it's like OTAs, and then it's like actual camp, and then it's preseason. Like, none of these things matter, but they all matter a little bit more, you know, like the next thing each makes it feel and taste closer to the actual NFL season. And so people who get Debbie Downered about preseason games, is like, F off. Like, preseason's awesome. Like, you get to like, just finally get a taste of it. Like, I'm skeeving. I'm like a crackhead, like scratching my neck, just looking for like random footage from training camp. You're telling me you get to see them suit up and see a couple starters and see what our depth looks like and see some of our rookies actually play a quarter or so of football? Sign me the fuck up.
Yeah, it's like the NFL does a great job of that slow burn. Yeah. They start off and they just like, oh, here's the draft. Mm-hmm. Okay, here's free agency. Like, it's like that.
You're making a great device. Motion for exactly what the NFL's doing. Oh, yeah, there. So slow burn that my one throat. Hand. You start out just regular.
Actually, I'm going motion. Like this. Like, yeah, yeah.
And then you
yeah.
start a little rotational, you know. Then you start cupping the balls.
Well, you got
then
the you technique. You
start making there. Eye yeah. contact.
You got the technique.
Bam! Bro. Before you know it, it's Monday Night Football, baby. 33
right in your
away.
Face. Bam in your face. So 33 days away, you want to pick like Tyvon Branch. You want to pick DeAndre Washington. Mm. Lynn Bowden Jr. was number 33 for his fucking 2 weeks here. So either one of those motherfuckers.
We got numbers. We got numbers.
When it comes to the preseason for me, though, I'm always that guy that tries not to get excited about going 3-1 or 4-0 in preseason. But it fucking matters.
Oh, yeah, the record,
man.
I don't care.
It fucking matters. Well, yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. Everyone says it doesn't matter. But I think it matters. Like, if we go 0-4, that means something. If we go 4-0, that means something.
What was the – wasn't it the Vikings that went – was it 0-14 or 0-16? But they went 4-0 in the preseason? Was it the Vikings that did that?
That was the Lions.
It was the Lions that went 4-0 in the preseason and then 0-16 in the regular season.
Well, the thing is,
I would get t-shirts made if that happened. Like, if one of you guys was like a Lions fan and that happened, I would get you a t-shirt that said preseason undefeated 1997 or whatever it was.
A lot of time you see a lot of the bad teams that do well in the preseason because they have their guys that are actually going to play on the field mm-hmm. playing deeper because they don't have those clear cut starters on their team.
Yeah.
They have a bunch of guys fighting for spots. So you
bunch
get
of
a
young guys who need the experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you get a bunch of those guys that, you know, in the second halves of games who normally wouldn't play or the positions or the starters wouldn't
a bunch
play.
Of guys. You don't care if they
yeah.
get hurt.
Yeah. So they would be, they're out there fighting for a job. But yeah, I mean, JR, I'm going to ask you a question. What are you looking for? First preseason game this weekend against the Seahawks.
So I have some specific things and just kind of like general things. Because the team is so young, I think preseason matters more, especially with how young we were last season and we had no preseason. So like, this is like the first time. I know there's like they do like a scrimmage with, you know, I think it was like the Rams, the Raiders do scrimmages with sometimes. Mm-hmm. But like, this is the first time that like, I don't know, like, Jonathan Abram can like really put together like a football play that doesn't really matter. Like, it's literally him just like, all right, I'm literally just here for experience. I'm just here for reps. I don't have to worry. You know, I don't really, it doesn't matter that much if I let a pass go, or I don't have to like try to cover for my safety. That's not working well. Like, I can finally just go live when the stakes don't matter and just learn. You can just focus on learning for guys like him. And then for obviously all the, you know, it's like every single other team, all the undrafted free agents, all the, you know, guys like that, that they just picked up. Can they make the squad and all that? But for the Raiders specifically, because they're so young, I think it matters more for them. and very specifically offensive line continuity and getting them to mesh. That's the biggest thing. Cause even though it's not brand new faces, like we talked about 100 times, like, you know, there's Richie Incognito's starter, you know, Colt Miller, obviously Andre James has played before. It's just getting them to play together and mesh, especially with the zone blocking scheme that we're probably going to be using with our run game coming up. They really got to know each other. They got to like be able to just kind of like look over and like give a little nudge and know what that means. Like they got to start like basically be like predicting each other's movements, reading the tone of their voices. Like they need that happening. And so, and obviously the preseason is like the most realistic way to get those reps.
Well, also I think that the Chiefs might start like 4 new starters in the offensive line and no one's saying shit about their offensive line. It's fucking nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. Chiefs. The Kansas City Chiefs are punting on their season because they revamped their O-line. No, fuck, that's just a hot take for Raiders. Raider haters.
Stupid asses. No, I'm looking for the defense. I think offensive line is huge, but I think the new scheme defensively, maybe not running around and making all the plays yet, but lining up, knowing what your assignment is, knowing where you're supposed to be, knowing, you know, what you're supposed to do on the checks and everything. And you know, if you're, I don't want to see that whole Spider-Man meme where everyone's pointing at each other in the secondary. You know, I want people to know where they're supposed to be. That's what I'm looking for.
I just want fundamentals. I want, obviously, the kind of on the roster bubble guys to stand out. Like, we'll learn a lot about defensive tackle. We'll learn a lot about wide receiver. But honestly, fundamentals, man. We're seeing a ton of pre-snap penalties. Obviously, you'd hope that happens now in preseason. But it's good indication that we still don't have our shit together, you know?
Yeah, I like the fundamentals comment because it's like they're not allowed to practice anymore. Like, collective bargaining agreement, like they didn't practice today just for no reason. Just they're like, okay, let's give these guys a break. Let's give them some time. It's like, they just don't practice. So like when you're, especially with like a really complicated offense that John Gruden runs, like there's a lot of classwork. There's a lot of just like learning the play. Sometimes you forget, like, how do I run my route correctly? Make sure Jonathan Abram break down, move your feet and then tackle. Don't speed and like Superman torpedo yourself at people. Like just basic fundamentals of football or something that needs to be like repped and practiced. And if you don't, and in practice, it's sometimes hard to know if you don't really have it. But when you start missing tackles in preseason games, you're like, okay, let me
got to work on
go
that,
back yeah. to like Pop Warner football drills a little bit. Make sure I get my feet under me.
You know, football has changed when it's a big deal and the Raiders Instagram says we're in full pads today. Like, what's like a big fucking deal that they're in full pads? Yeah. Like, oh shit, wow, they're actually getting full pads today.
Millikan High School down the street from me have been doing double days full pads for like 4 weeks. Like they've been
and it's like it's 86 degrees right now.
Yeah.
It's like 90 degrees in Long Beach.
It's nuts. Like I'm driving by with the window rolled up, it's too hot. I'm like, Jesus, like honking, like good, get them boys. Keep working. Yeah. I don't envy those days.
I want to see Tanner Muse before we move up for this. I want to see Tanner Muse. Like if he's in that strong side linebacker spot. Like he's kind of a risk reward kind of guy in that if he gets injured in preseason, the defense isn't going to break down if he gets injured, right? Yeah. So this is his first opportunity to really own that position and show something. So guys like that, that, you know, we've got some first round picks that are buried behind other people on the roster, on the depth chart right now. Mm-hmm. Like there's nothing to lose, right?
I would love to see how this pass rush does against the Seahawks. I would really. And we got Gabe Jackson on the other side, right, in Seattle. It's kind of like just see how we do.
Talking all this shit. Let's see what that winning organization looks like, Gabe. Mm-hmm. It's your bitch ass talking shit.
Yeah, because we keep hearing how great this pass rush is, right? Like, Yannick Ngakoue is like, yeah, we're going to have like 40 sacks this season. Like, I'm going to have 10. Crosby's going to have 10. Hankins going to have 6. Like, he did the math on it. And you're like, okay, that's going to be like 40 sacks this season.
One other guy, Mariota. Let's see your boy Mariota. Let's see if he's worth that second round, third round pick.
Yeah. That would be the best possible scenario, right? Cause you know, Derek Carr is going to get some reps, but not a whole time.
We'll get a series. He already knows. He knows the fucking offense.
He'll do a series. Like just kind of meshing with the new wide receivers, basically. Right. Like John Brown, Willie Snead mesh with them a little bit. That's basically, and Andre James, right. Remember like, even though James played well in like the game and a half that he played, he muffed like 3 or 4 long snaps. Like hopefully that looks good as well.
I want to see Mariota just thick dick it out there. I want him to be like, whoa, what the fuck?
Just ball the fuck out and have Indy be like,
I wanted to look I want him to look nice and sharp. He doesn't have to, you know, because there's probably not going to be a lot of starters playing around him, but I want him to look, know exactly what he's doing, take command, be decisive. I want him to look nice and sharp.
Those aren't the parts I'm worried about. I just care about accuracy. That's literally the only part of his game that I like want to see him.
He's not an accurate passer. He's never going
to
be.
That's what I'm saying. Just give me like two series of really accurate passing and try to
fool everyone in the front office. He's not going to be that.
He can put together two quarters of accuracy and pull the wool over some GM's eyes. He could do that.
Okay,
pull
fine.
That off. It's like
if all you're looking at is his preseason game, then fine. But that's not all that people are looking at. He's Carson Wentz. He's a Carson Wentz-ish, but he's not as young.
This is what I want from Mariota. You remember Stanford, Dane's buddy Stanford? We went to a bar one time, and I'm a decent pool player. Like, yeah, I'm pretty good. I had a pool table growing up. I'm pretty good. Definitely not great.
We got to play.
Let's do it. So I was doing doubles with Stanford. I've never played with him before. Pool. With two random dudes. And this is back at Acapulco Inn.
Oh, yeah. AI.
AI back at Second Street, Long Beach. And I played the game of my life. I don't know if I had like just the right amount of booze in me. I don't know if maybe I got late that morning, was just feeling confident, but I ran the table in two turns. I have never played a game of pool that good. I will never play a game of pool that good again. But the one time I played it with Stanford, he thinks I'm this huge hustler. So every time we're out, he's like, RJ, let's find some suckers. Let's get a game going. Let's hustle these fools. And every time I'm just like, no. Because I know I'll never do that again. That's what I want Marcus Mariota to do on Saturday. Put together just two brilliant quarters of football, accurate passes, commanding the offense, throwing on the run, and have everybody in Indy, every GM being like, oh, man, he's got it. You know, Gruden really, really tuned him up. He's the man. Let's trade a second rounder for him. That's what I'm hoping for.
I can imagine RJ fucking play that night. He's just like, you guys have to be the worst pool players in the world. You should be honored to be playing at my table.
I have never played. I'm decent. I've never played that good in my life. I never will again. But to this day, Stanford thinks I'm a pool shark. Like he thinks they should be making movies about me, how good I am. That's what I want Mariota to do on Saturday.
I think he'll do it. I think you could do, you know, like,
yeah,
you want accuracy. I want deep shots. Mm-hmm. We got burners, man. There's nothing to lose. It's preseason. That's what's going to get GMs, you know, jizzing in their pants. It's going to be deep shots to John Brown or Willie Snead or whoever.
Yeah. You know? I want a couple things to happen for Mariota. I want Mariota to throw a couple of timing passes, short timing passes. Mm-hmm. I want Mariota to extend a few plays and beat them deep, which is one thing that Carr doesn't do that often. When he extends plays, he usually, you know, checks down. But I want him to extend a play with his feet and throw the ball deep. I also want him to hit a couple of secondary targets. If he can do stuff like that, that's going to show, hey, this guy can go through progressions. This guy can extend plays. This guy can throw the small passes here and there if, you know, we need him to eat some clock up with the passing game. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, those things will work great.
It's going to feel good to watch football again.
God damn, it felt good.
Lazy boy, Thursday, beer in hands.
It felt good to watch. Yeah, I don't know the fuck half of these people were. I'm like, geez, what the fuck are these guys? Yeah. It just felt good to watch it.
I'm also curious to see, like, who kind of takes the leadership role on the defense, right? Because, like, you figure Corey Littleton is, you know, supposed to be the captain of the defense. Does he grab it? Yannick Ngakoue, he's, like, the guy that's been brought in, the big money dude. Is he going to be a vocal leader like we hope? Is Max Crosby going to grab that? Is Casey Hayward going to just be the general of our DBs that he was brought in to be? Is he going to, like, because everyone talks about, oh, he's a good leader and he helps us, which is great, which is wonderful. And if that's all he does, it's still a net win. But a whole other skill is being the vocal rah-rah guy. You go here, you go there. I got you, buddy. Like that kind of guy in the defensive backfield as well. It's like, will Hayward be that? Because he wasn't really that guy in San Diego, but he also wasn't surrounded by a bunch of newbies in a new system either.
Yeah, he wasn't being looked up to by all the other DBs. There's four names that you just mentioned that are going to be, I think, the leaders for different reasons. Yannick Ngakoue, because he's just a fucking physical stud.
Yeah,
he goes out there, he makes it happen. So when we had AJ Hawk on here, he said, hey, guys that make plays, people listen to him. Mm-hmm. And Ngakoue is the guy that goes out there. He's the guy proven to be able to put up numbers and make plays.
Yeah.
Max Crosby is just a stand-up dude. They fucking love him. And he's a hard worker. And no one has a bad word to say about him. Gerald McCoy, if he starts to play, this guy is gregarious. He's out there. He's a funny guy. He's a funny guy. You like that?
Indubitably.
Listen to this.
Where the fuck did that come from?
Yeah, it's my fucking under my look. I have a shorn sack now. I have a nice clean sack. I don't have somewhere to put my notes.
So you can hide your thesaurus underneath your hairless balls. You can see it now. It's not looking through a rainforest.
Shout out to Manscaped. No, Gerald, if you guys remember the whole tradition of giving the Commissioner Goodell a big hug was Gerald McCoy. Mm-hmm. He was the first one to go up there and give him that big bear hug and lift him up off the ground. He was the first guy to really put that out there. This guy, if he is able to find his way into the starting lineup and produce, this guy's going to be another vocal leader. And like you said, Casey Hayward.
So you think because he gave Roger Goodell a hug, that means he's going to be a leader?
You see what I'm working with?
No. I want to make sure. Am I understanding that right?
Like, that's exactly right, RJ. That's the exact reason why.
That's literally what you said.
Because he fucking pushed his junk against Goodell's junk and he rubbed him and he caressed him. That's exactly why.
I always think of the big Samoans, man. They got like this close to Roger Goodell, you know?
Yeah.
But that's a good like bar quiz stat. That'll come up in a Raider bar one day. Like, who's the first person to pick up Roger Goodell?
Gerald
motherfucking McCoy. Anyway.
The other thing I want to see, not that it's like a preseason specific thing, but like, is Darren Waller gonna suit up? Where has he been? What is going on? He hasn't practiced. He hasn't even put pads on in practice. He hasn't really practiced yet. And no one, and everyone's being like super tight-lipped about it. Where the hell is Darren Waller going?
He wants that money, baby.
Yeah, you know what that means.
Quiet holdout.
Honestly, that's what it's looking like. But honestly, to go back to defensive leaders, I got to say, man, you hit the nail on the head with Gerald McCoy, but there's different types of leaders, right? There's the lead by experience, show them, don't necessarily tell them. I think we got a lot of those in the linebacker core, like Corey Littleton, Nick Kwiatkowski. Those aren't necessarily rah-rah guys. They're not going to be the loud vocal leaders you'd expect from like the middle linebacker types. But, you know, like a Jonathan Abram, even though he's a youngster, like he did a mic'd up the other day. You hear him like chirping the entire day. It seems like the team really resonates with him. Mm-hmm. And similarly on the defensive line, you know, you got Jonathan Hankins. I mean, I'm looking to see Gus Bradley. Like, we're talking about leaders, like, goddamn, we've had Paul Gunther and his, you know, just useless sack of shit on the sideline. No passion, no energy, no nothing. Yeah. Gus Bradley is the complete opposite of that. So I want to see how Gus Bradley interacts with the players when they make a play.
If you look back at some old Seahawks games, because I used to watch Seahawks games because I'm an SC fan, Pete Carroll. But Pete Carroll actually was a rah-rah guy, like cheering off the field. But Gus Bradley was the one giving them jumping fucking butt bumps and jumping high fives. And then Pete Carroll started to do that afterwards. But it was Gus Bradley who was the real, you know, in your face, pump you up type of guy.
Pete Carroll's 97-year-old ass couldn't do that because he'd throw his hip.
Well, now he can't, but before when he first started, he was only 84.
Well, even then, him at 84 is probably in better shape than me at 38. So I don't know why I'm talking. So the starting lineup. Is we're starting to get little bits and pieces of it. We're starting to kind of see like who was doing the first team reps when practice is going on and during training camp and all that. Now we'll see what the starting lineup is going to be in our first preseason game on Saturday. Now it's not tell all, because if you even have a sort of bump or bruise somewhere, you're not seeing the field. So it's not exactly what it is, but we can kind of tell Soto, like we're getting a pretty good feel of who's starting and who isn't. And there's some, I don't know if it's surprises, but it's definitely not standard operating procedure for a guy who was picked fourth overall three seasons ago to not be a starter. Like I think it's happened like four times in the last 20 years, something like that.
There's a couple of names here that really jump out at me, and they're all on the defensive end. Starting lineups for offense, it's industry standard. What you might think it is, it's what it is. Yeah, Ruggs, Miller, Incognito, James, Good, Leatherwood, Waller, Edwards, Renfrow, Carr, Jacobs. Like that's your starting lineup for as of right now.
Except okay? Brian Edwards. I think it's awesome that Brian Edwards is a starter. I just want to say that before moving on.
Who else is going to play the X? Is it going to be Zay Jones? You're going to put Zay Jones out there?
I mean, that's a prudent thing to do though, right? Reward the veterans. Like I thought John Brown would be above Ruggs. I thought, Snead might be above Renfrow. That's the sort of dumb shit that we do.
No, Edwards was starting last year. He started in the beginning of the year last year.
He started until he got hurt, and then Aguilar took his job and never let it go.
Yeah, because he kept producing. But Edwards started last year as a rookie. But the names that jump out at me are
That's who Gruden wants to be the starters, right? Like, he wants his young, high drafted, like, that's who he, these are the guys whose job it is to lose. They could have already lost it, but it, Edwards, Renfro, Ruggs, it's like,
Ruggs.
They're the guys. Z, X, Y. Like, those are the dudes, right?
It's good, though. It's what we want to see.
Yeah. But the thing is, you don't see that on the defensive side. You see number four overall pick, Cleveland Farrell, playing behind a fourth round pick in the same draft, Max Crosby. You know, you see Nick Kwiatkowski playing behind Nicholas Morrow, who was an undrafted free agent. Mm-hmm. Nick Kwiatkowski is your second highest paid free agent signing from a year ago. Mm-hmm. Right. And then you see Damon Arnett playing a first rounder playing behind Casey Hayward, who is, you know,
31,
was having trouble starting, you know, at the end of, at Los Angeles Chargers last year. I mean, here's the issue that I have.
What are we paying Hayward? About this. Five mil?
Four and change. The issue that I'm having here and why this jumps out at me so much is if, and it's a big if these guys can't be solid contributors to the team, and I mean, I'm talking making an impact. Not just because you're a backup doesn't mean you're going to play a little. I mean, you could play a lot, but you don't just you have to be more than just being able to spell the starter. You have to be able to go in there and make an impact when you're in there. Mm-hmm. And if they can't do that, and we just have that kind of murky water in the wide receiver core, unfortunately, you can't sustain success by not having your first round picks who are controllable with a club friendly contract for a long period of time. You can't sustain success that way. You have to have your first round picks be able to be your starters and be able to make an impact. And I mean, and especially your big money free agents, they have to start. Morrow playing over Kwiatkowski is a big fucking red flag. You know,
It depends how you look at it. Like,
you're giving him a lot of money and he's not starting. That's the only way to look at it. How else can you look at it?
Because if we just cut Gutkowski's contract's done after this season, right? Like, we can, after that, we don't have to pick up. We have an option after this season,
year,
right?
JR,
I know, but what I'm saying is you can get really, really good guys for cheap, like off the scrap heap, and they produce. That's better than just being forced to start Gutkowski with nobody there. Like, you're right. Like, in the perfect world, all our first rounders are starters for the next 10 years for us, right? Like, of course, that's what we want, right?
You're changing the argument again. What I'm saying is you cannot sustain success by doing shit like this. You cannot sustain success by having your high-priced free agents not start for you.
Sustain success by like forcing high price guys and first rounders to start when there's guys better than them.
Okay, but what you're saying is already happening. That's wrong. I'm not saying start Kwiatkowski. No. I'm saying him not starting is a big red flag on our team.
But you gotta understand how low the bar is for the Raiders. Like, we're gonna draft shitty. We're gonna pick up expensive shitty free agents.
I'm not gonna sit here and be okay with that. I'm gonna call it out and say, look, if this continues to happen, we're looking at a teardown in two more years. If their first rounders are not starting, and we have to keep getting these middle of the road free agents and paying them extra, and then even them not starting, we're gonna have to do another teardown in 2 years.
Rory keeps shaking his head.
You got the wrong KPIs there, my friend. Like, if we're winning games and the defense is improving, who gives a fuck where they were drafted, right? Like, if we're a top five defense and it's Morrow over Kwiatkowski, who gives a shit, you know? Like, the biggest thing to me, obviously this is, it's preseason. It's depth chart number one. It means nothing. It means something, but it's not that much, right? Mm. You already said Gus Bradley's going to rotate these players. So the idea of having a fresh Kwiatkowski coming in behind a Morrow isn't a bad thing. It's more like the weird thing here isn't necessarily Kwiatkowski being behind Morrow or Cleveland Farrell being behind Max Crosby, or even Casey Hayward coming in as a vet that knows Gus Bradley's system, being ahead of Damon Arnett. It's guys like, I don't necessarily understand Tanner Muse, a guy that hasn't played at all or shown anything at all behind a Nicholas Morrow or a Kwiatkowski. Like, does that mean one of them can't play strong side? That's what doesn't really make sense to me. And then the other one that sticks out like a sore thumb is Amik Robertson. What the fuck is he doing third in the nickel behind Nevin Lawson and Nate Hobbs.
Yeah.
Like that's a doghouse move, man. That's not a good sign.
Well, Nevin Lawson is going to be gone the first four games, right? So
two game right. suspension, right? Isn't it? I thought it was two.
It was four.
Is it four?
No, I thought it was four. Please.
Yeah. Google that.
I'll find out.
Google machine that. So Nate, you're looking at Nate Hobbs starting over Amik Robertson, which I mean, these guys are not high priced guys, but
two games.
You know, is it two games? Okay. Well, the first two games, I'm sorry, my mistake, but it's not a first rounder. It's not a first round guy who's supposed to make an impact on your team. It's a fourth round pick, not, right. you know, fifth round pick maybe. And if you're, you know, butthurt about a fourth, fifth round pick, not starting, you're looking at the wrong guys. You got to look at these first rounders and these free agents that you're paying a lot of money to are not starting. That's a big deal.
I tell you, if Carl Joseph was listed above Jonathan Abram, I would be alarmed. You know what I mean? I'd be shocked at that. That's a first-round pick that should, by all accounts, start over Carl Joseph. Even though Carl Joseph is, you know, he's a Raider, man. We're all excited about him coming back in a backup yep. role. Mm-hmm. Like, if I honestly didn't expect Damon Arnette to start over Casey Hayward. Casey Hayward was brought in as their veteran leader. Everyone's saying that he's the guy the secondary is looking to, and he's kind of the leader of the group already. Besides Jonathan Abram, like DT is a complete shit show, as you guys have already said. There's kind of that low risk, high reward. Someone's going to emerge from that group. Kendall Vickers flashed last year. We've heard tons about Darius Still. Solomon Thomas is another one of those guys that you hope could kind of pop this year and be the guy that we're looking for. Like preseason for me is about finding those kind of guys and giving them the roster spot and answering those questions.
The beautiful thing is, because there's such Gus Bradley runs such a less complicated defensive system than Gunther did last season. It's not like obviously continuity in a unit is great, right? Like obviously, like if guys play more and more together, they know each other more. It's always better. But with defensive backs, it's less important than like offensive linemen or like quarterback with a receiver. Like you can interchange guys constantly. Like I love the idea of Gus Bradley like, hey, this week, Abram, you're the starter. Oh, week three, Joseph, you're the starter. You know, week five, you know, Hobbs, you're in, lost your out. Like, you can do that. Like, because there's so much young blood in there, make it competition, make it competitive. Earn your spot, not every game, every 6 a.m. workout. Earn your spot every single time. And so, like, that's why I love how, like, our O-line, like, it's set in stone. Like, they're pretending like there's, like, some competition between James and
there's
Nick
no
Martin.
Competition.
It's not happening. We know who our starting five are, right? Look. And they need to play together and build continuity and know each other. DBs, you can be replaced like that any moment. Literally every single starting DB, there's a guy nipping at your heels that has a very good reason to take your job. Every single position.
That's why it was so smart of Deion Sanders. What was it? Maybe like 4 or 5 years ago during the combine. They're asking him, oh yeah, how many teams, who needs to get a DB? And he's like, everybody needs DBs. And he didn't elaborate on it. And I sat there and listened to it. I'm like, okay. And they're like trying to pry it out of him because he wasn't very good. He was just like, everyone needs DB. And he sounded like he's being braggadocious because he was a DB and everyone needs a DB. But he's like, no, you're a passing league now. You need at least five good DBs on your team to be able to rotate these guys in and out. And, you know, a couple other guys that are okay that you could coach up. So you need to draft multiple DBs every single year. You need to draft at least two.
Think of it in this terms, right? Like, how shocking would it be week one if Mariota started over Carr? How shocking would it be if, like, Brandon Parker started over Colton Miller? Like, it would be like, what? Something's totally up. Like, anarchy. Someone's hurt. Someone's just like, something's going on. We wouldn't raise an eyebrow if Carl Joseph started over Jonathan Abram. We wouldn't raise an eyebrow if Damon Arnette started over Casey Hayward. Like, it would just be like, oh, yeah, like, that's how our DBs are.
Oh, he stepped up, you know?
Yeah, he stepped up. Yeah, everyone's position. Like, that's what our DB room is, and I like that for this system, right? It's not, we're not the Legion of Boom, right? There's not these, like, ballers that are just going to, like, take control. Yeah, right? Hopefully, right? Like, we're looking for that. And so that's what I mean is, like, let it be competition, like, would you be shocked if our like starting DBs were completely different preseason game one, preseason game two, preseason game three, week one of the regular season? Like, I'll be shocked at all. My head would explode if like Willie Snead started over Hunter Renfrow. I wouldn't even bat an eye if like Nate Hobbs started over Nevin Lawson. Like, it'd be like, okay, yeah, whatever.
You know, it's so underrated, like being able to switch guys in and out that still can produce. Mm-hmm. When I was playing, we had this guy, Bruce. He was a nose tackle. And this guy was like short as hell, just a stocky little
dude. Got in the backfield. Did you guys say the Bruce is loose?
No, I don't think we ever said that ever. Not one time. So no pun. This movie, Necessary Roughness, came out. Right. And that was, I think, I was a sophomore in high school.
So this is like 1964.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that's why I haven't seen it. 1972.
So there was this guy, and he would just be like, "Woo, yeah, woo!" Like, and then so Bruce, when he would run into the game, the play's over, and then like, you know, you're getting switched to whoever's switching out for him. The nose tackle gets out, and we just hear Bruce running, "Woo, woo!" running in from the sidelines, and we just got amped up because Bruce, like, he was crazy. He fucking was always fucking getting penalties and late hits. He couldn't play all the time, but he played a little bit here and there. But whenever he came into the game, he was a type of he had that type of like presence that like just boosted the rest of the team. So if you have these guys that are like, get these tight knit groups together that are okay with switching in and out, that can really give everyone else a boost whenever they come in.
Who would be the Bruce of the defense? I mean, it's gotta be Abram, right? It's gotta be Abram, like a non-starting Abram.
I can't, I don't want to say anything about Abram right now, because what he's shown me is, he should be working at the Jimmy John's making my sandwich. That's what he's shown me.
Yeah.
But if he can do better, then great. I'm not going to say anything about Abram until I see him on the field.
I want him to break out so bad.
Yeah.
So bad. I really do, man. Especially Gus Bradley. Like, if Gus Bradley can't coach him up and you know, maximize that sort of a talent with his limitations, knowing that he's done the same before in the past, so successfully, obviously, Cam Chancellor and others, Derwin James. Like, if it's not going to happen with Gus Bradley, it's just not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. His specialty is the DBs. That's what he's known for, is getting the DB group to just fly around, create turnovers, make things difficult. And if he can't do that with if Abram can't succeed in this system, he just can't succeed anywhere.
And I think it's obviously the DBs are going to need a lot of help. And I think they'll get some more help, obviously, compared to last year, from our defensive line and get some pressure on the quarterback, right? Because if you've got all day to throw, it doesn't matter who you have back there. You know, these AFC West quarterbacks are going to eat you apart if they're just sitting in the pocket happy and not worried about anything. So I think, like, with Ngakoue here, Max Crosby being healthy, you know, someone coming out of that defensive tackle position is going to break through and be someone that can get some pressure on the quarterback. Like, that's going to change everything for the DBs. Like, that's going to be the game changer. And what's going to make these DBs succeed or not, I think, more than anything. Like, we kind of know who they are. Maybe that's not fair, because they can be completely different under Gus Bradley. But with the benefit of like pressure on a quarterback, like, that's going to give these young guys a chance to like really show, get some confidence, like playing with like one training wheel on, basically. If you're playing against a passer that's under pressure, like, that can cure a lot of warts that you may have as a defensive player.
But warts it can't cure, though, is when the strong safety dick? And the, yes, those actually are gone. The ones on my left nut is still there. Yeah. So what it can't cure is when the strong safety and the corner jump the same fucking guy.
Yeah.
And if you're under pressure, just throw it up there. He's wide open. He's going to catch it. So I think it's a little bit more than that. I think that them being in the right positions and knowing what they're supposed to do is going to make a world of difference, because they played, I mean, they were not a good unit last year, and they looked it every step of the way. They didn't know where they were supposed to be. They didn't know who they were supposed to cover. If the fucking team shifted, they were like, what the fuck is this?
Is that legal?
Like, why are they moving?
They motioned one wide receiver. My head's gonna explode. To
be right here.
Where'd
you go? Which one of y'all kicked me?
This is my biggest worry with Gus Bradley as a hire in general. Is that, as we all know, he likes to generate pass rush off of the four guys, and I don't know if our four guys are ever going to be. I mean, Ngakoue, don't get me wrong, I'm super stoked on Ngakoue. Max Crosby, I'm a big Max Crosby fan. I like him a lot. I love the idea of Farrell coming out hot as well. But you know, can we generate pressure consistently with a four-man rush? I don't know. And, you know, it is the DB's best friend, as you said, RJ. It's just, that would be my biggest fear with Gus Bradley.
So here's the thing. Ngakoue's going to give you what he's going to give you. Okay. Crosby's going to give you that. Crosby's not going to get doubled. If you're going to double one guy, you're going to double Crosby. You're going to double Ngakoue. You're going to double Ngakoue, right? So Crosby's going to get a lot more singles, like he did his rookie season when he did really well. He's healthy now. He wasn't healthy last year.
Sober.
He's going to see less double teams.
He's seeing double less at all because he's sober.
Yeah, exactly. If you get anything close from McCoy, what he did his last season with the Panthers, with 5 sacks, 35 tackles, if you get anything close to that, you're going to be just fine on the defensive line. Mm-hmm. You're going to get that pressure because he's pressuring a lot more than he's sacking. So that up the middle pressure seems to be, you know, ask anyone who plays the Rams what that up the middle pressure does for a quarterback.
Right. It's a big deal.
Support for the Autumn Windbags is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below the waist grooming, the champions of the world. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped just launched their fourth generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0. You heard that right, 4.0. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with his exclusive offer for you, 20% off and free worldwide shipping with code WINBAGS at manscaped.com. Like I said, I'm a user of said Manscaped. I'm scaped. This man is fully scaped. Glad that I am, because let's be honest, the less bush, the more your oak appears, right?
Like the more it protrudes.
If you've got a giant sequoia tree and it's surrounded by palm trees, it doesn't look quite as big. But if you've got a sequoia tree in just a barren wasteland of sand,
it's just looking girthy, veiny.
It's veiny and girthy. Got to take care of yourself down there.
Yeah, look, the thing is, we can talk all we want about the Manscaped, and it's a great tool. If you've never used it before, just do yourself a favor, do your chick a favor, do your dude a favor, whatever. Go out there, get one, and try it. It's fucking great. Use it in the shower. Fucking awesome. And you can shave your asshole.
For a friend. Asking for a friend, can you shave your asshole with it?
I haven't shaved my asshole, but I'm sure you could.
I know. He knows you haven't shaved your asshole, Soto, but whose assholes have you shaved? Like, we know you've shaved some guys' assholes. Like, which
is yours? Yours, RJ.
That's why I was waiting for you to say. What am I, chopped liver? I
know. Those short arms. You can't reach your asshole.
Even with the little light on the Manscaped, it's still hard. I can't, you know, I need like 3 mirrors. I only have 2 hands.
It's got that red hair as well. It looks like a fucking Cheeto got crushed on it.
he's all Rory, hot Cheetos.
Rory, you could shave a picture of the Queen of England in there, right? Like, you can do whatever you want with that thing. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code WINBAGS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off. One of every $5 you save with free shipping worldwide at manscaped.com, and use code WINBAGS. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped.
What a pro. What a pro read right there.
So we were talking about the last couple of weeks, just the weird, crazy anarchy that looks like is going on in the front office of the Raiders. 4 executives, including the team president, poof, up and gone.
And the thing is, wait, it's not just 4 executives, it's 4 money guys.
Yeah.
Specifically money guys.
CFO, president, you know, guys that have been there a long time, all kind of up and disappeared. Now with the president disappearing, Bedane, you saw, you know, Mark Davis, like, send out a tweet, send out a comment, blah, blah, blah. But all these people leaving, and then no word. No, like, all right, here's your gold watch for your service. Like, here's your going away party. Like, none of that. Just gone. And so we all kind of raised. And so, like, we all kind of raised our eyebrows. Soto and I, like, what's going on? What, you know, is there something wrong there? Is there a power struggle going on, or is it just simply new president and he brings his own guys in? Like, it happens, you know, with like head coaches, right? They come in, they clear guys out. They, you know, I got some new guys. Here we go. Like, you know, Gus Bradley brought in, you know, a new DB coach, new linebacker coach, like all this stuff, right? Is it as simple as that? Well, according to a report from Front Office Sports, there is a investigation. The Raiders are investigating themselves. The Raiders have hired a law firm to investigate the Raiders.
Allow myself to introduce myself.
Which leads me to one thing. There's only one thing this could mean. lawsuit.
Some bullshit happens.
Somebody is suing somebody.
Yeah.
Is it Mark Bedane suing the Raiders for like firing him when they shouldn't? Is someone going to claim like sexual harassment or embezzle? Like this type of action with everyone being quiet. And all we know is that the Raiders are paying very expensive attorneys to investigate themselves. They're just making sure all their ducks are in a row. All their, you know, I's are dotted, T's are crossed, so that when it goes to a judge or goes to a trial or goes to a jury or goes to whatever, like they've got all their information, all their data there in front of them. This is heading towards a lawsuit if it hasn't already.
Yeah, it's
not
weird.
Good like, news.
When you don't hear anything from the Raiders, that's one thing. But when it happens, but after a couple of weeks, because like, no, if a reporter asks you afterwards, and if they've asked the Raiders after, hey, what happened with so-and-so? Oh, yeah, they'll tell you. They're not going to just, you know, give you the information, but if they ask, they'll tell you. They haven't said shit. They have not returned calls. They've been tight-lipped about everything, and that's the weird part. They're not saying shit before it happened or giving any indication of before it happened. Okay, that's the rate of how the Raiders do shit. But them not answering any questions after the fact, now we know is there's an investigation going on. They probably can't say anything.
Yeah, you're pretty much spot on, I think, dude. It's the lack of – usually if there's something there that could become litigious, the folks around the organization, they're just scared of actually saying something to even close people to them because they know it could end up in a subpoena.
Yep.
You know, but honestly – I kind of like what Mark Bedane said in his statement to ESPN. And it kind of resonates. It kind of makes sense. You know, the successful construction and operation of Allegiant Stadium has been unequivocally the most challenging part of my 30 years with the organization. Seeing it through to the end has been rewarding beyond measure. Together, the Raiders in Las Vegas accomplished what seemed impossible. Now that the project is complete, it's time for me to focus on my family and look ahead to new pursuits. For me, I mean, I get it, dude. Imagine the shit that he's been through over the last 2-3 years. He just needs a break.
Yeah. I mean, having to deal with fucking Oakland, number one, they're fucking wishy-washy asses up there. And just having them just basically spit in their face for fucking years, not wanting to give them anything. And then that whole debacle that happened with LA and all this shit, I can see where it could be a lot of stress on the guy. I just don't want it to be like, yeah, I want to ride off into sunset and fucking spend my kickback money that I got because I'm out of here. You know, that's what I'm worried about. That could be a big, big problem for everybody.
It's the timing that throws this all off.
Yeah, so like, it just doesn't seem right. It's weird.
So I come from a family business. Like my grandpa started a trucking company. My dad and uncles run it. My cousins run it now. Like we come from trucking family. Like, and so this, the second generation, my dad and uncles have spent literally 10 years grooming the next generation, doing a succession planning and bringing in lawyers to draw the succession. Like, it's a big problem, and it's a $20 million trucking company, not a multi-billion dollar NFL franchise. For a team president to just up and bounce, like a month and a half before the season starts, that's weird. If he's like, okay, yeah, I've done all this work, I'm exhausted, I got the team to Vegas, I've done my job, he's not going to just bounce right away. He's like, okay, I'm going to retire in a year and a half. Here's who I want to replace me. I'm going to start, you know, I'm only going to come in Monday through Thursdays now, not here Monday through Friday. Like, it's a process if it's done correctly and if everything's hunky-dory. It's a problem when it's just bam, up and gone. That's what, it's not just that they left, it's that they just disappeared in the night. Like the Tuesday they were there and Wednesday that desk is like empty. Like that's what's weird to me.
Where's the hula girl? Where's Bedane's hula chick on his desk? Is gone. I don't
exactly.
See it.
Exactly. Right?
Well, yeah, that's the guy that the way he left, how abrupt it was, and no one's saying shit. And now we know it's because you can't say shit.
Yeah.
It's just fucking strange, man. I just hope nothing bullshit was going down and makes the NFL regret going to fucking Vegas.
Yeah, you got Better Call Saul, like, investigating around Las Vegas. Like, you
don't. I'm not trying to say who someone did something or someone didn't say anything, but the possibility is there. And it's just, it would be a fucking just, another reason to laugh at the fucking Raiders. As if us losing and just not doing well in the draft and all this shit happening so often. Just shitting on your own dick. That's just, oh God.
As long as it doesn't impact us on the field, who cares, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, he's been a good servant of the team. This could just be nothing. It could just be guys that are burnt out and, you know, the other money guys deciding that they're also burned out and they just need a fresh challenge. It could be nothing. Hopefully it is nothing because we don't need another distraction.
Thank you, Rory. Thank you for calming me down.
Fingers crossed. Well, this is the thing is like, whatever happened, like the front office is a like ambassador to kind of how the whole organization is run. Like obviously like the CFO isn't out there, like, you know, at the, on the jugs machine, making sure like Renfro has his hands sharp, right? Like that's obviously not what he's doing, but it's a kind of a trickle down effect. Like how your team is ran at the front office kind of trickles down to how everything is run, right? Like is it attention to detail? Is it a family organization? Is it, you know, everyone out for themselves, right? Like we've all worked different jobs. Like I've worked in some jobs where like everyone felt like we were on a team. I've been in other jobs where like we're all trying to get each other's job and we'll just stab everybody's back to get there, right? Like that's something that kind of trickles down to coaches, managers, and kind of down to players. So like, you're right. Like it could be absolute anarchy down there and no one with pads on has any clue. It doesn't affect them at all. But you know, is Darren Waller holding out right now? And is that because the front office can't communicate because the CFO just bounced? Like would this be worked out a month ago if the CFO didn't just bounce and the president just bounced? I don't know. Right? Like that's a big decision. Your bet, the best player on your team, maybe rumors wise, is holding out. Like that's all hands on fucking deck.
Yep.
Mark Davis, Bedane, Gruden, CFO, like they should all be in meetings like, all right, the best player on our team has a beef. Let's fix it right now. All those guys are gone. It's just Mark Davis, like in that Fresh Prince of Bel-Air when he's like in the empty mansion. Empty just like, mansion. All right, who am I going to do this with my like white fanny pack and bull haircut? Like this that's where it concerns me.
That's my Halloween costume right there.
Dude.
The Lloyd Christmas. With the fucking, with the white belt, the white, all white shoes.
I love a Halloween. It's going to sound like I'm being sarcastic, but I'm not. But I love a Halloween costume where like only 3 of 100 people know what it is. But those 3 people just like lose their shit. Like
100%.
You can see some Raider fan be like, ah, yes. Like,
there's 2 extremes and they both have to be done well. If you're going to be somebody that everybody knows, you have to like hit it spot on,
yeah,
and like make everyone else who's even thinking about doing it be like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be that guy because that guy really killed it. Like if you're like Ric Flair, like the Macho Man, like you got to really hit that fucking note, right?
Yeah.
Or if you're fucking Mark Davis, like if got the white on white on white with the fucking distressed jeans and the tucked in white t-shirt,
you better rent a Mini Cooper, dude. You got to go all out. You got to go all fucking out that weekend.
You got to hire a chick that looked like the chick that ran into him. Just kind of like follow you around, you like holding cars. Papers.
100% with a wedgie and everything, dude. Like you got to have the chick as well. It's a 2-part outfit.
So good.
Well, there may or may not be anarchy in the front office of the Raiders, but they're still a moneymaker. Forbes did their list of most valuable NFL franchises of 2021. Raiders right in the middle. Number 16, $3.145 billion franchise. Obviously, they took a huge bump when they moved to Las Vegas, new stadium, $750 million free dollars. Thank you, taxpayers of Las Vegas. I always kind of like, we go by Forbes because they're the best that we have. Like, there's no one better, but I always kind of just take it with a grain of salt. Like they really don't know how much money Conor McGregor's making. They really don't know exactly how much money the Raiders have and how they're operating, but it's the best we have, right? It's like the closest thing we have to those numbers. And so they kind of go by gospel.
Yeah. I mean, it's moving out of the 20s into the mid teens. It's a good start. I am concerned about one thing. Over this last year, it was a pandemic season for everybody. Now, some teams were able to have partial capacity where the Raiders didn't have any fans of games. But they increased their value in 2020 the least out of anyone in the league. So that's concerning. I think, and it's by 2 full percentage points. The one closest to them increased by 12%, and they only increased by 10%. So what does that mean? It means being able to hire the right executives. It means having more operating income. It means just everything. It means a lot off the field that can trickle onto the field.
I mean, if you look at the notes there in the Forbes article, though, it says enterprise values, equity plus net debt. I mean, we're covering some serious debt. You know what I mean? Obviously, our revenue is not.
Well, look at the Rams. The Rams are still good.
True.
They have a ton of debt.
True.
Guys, like, it's the NFL. They're printing money. So just the TV money for each team, just television. That's it. Just TV money that comes to you every single year, no matter if you sell one ticket, 80,000 tickets, one jersey, a million jerseys. Every team gets $321 million dollars a year for just TV money, doing nothing. That doesn't count ticket sales, sponsorships, jersey sales, fucking selling churros in the parking lot. Like that's just that. The salary cap is $182. Like, you have $140 million remaining after paying your players. $140 million to pay coaches, secretaries, front office people. Like, they're not losing money. Like, every NFL team has cash.
They're upside down $5 million in operating income.
But companies do that all the time. Like,
how many NFL teams do you see upside down?
I have no idea. I didn't look it up, but I just don't come.
I'll look at it right now.
Companies do that all the time. Like, it's all about building the equity, what you have. Like, you see this all the time. Like, there's this, you know, not to talk politics, but like, there's a big kind of like, oh man, Donald Trump was terrible because he ran all these hotels and he's a bad businessman because they're all have, you know, negative value. They're all operating at a deficit. Like, yeah, that was the point, because the value of the land was going up. And so he was just writing off all the losses and then sold the land. Things like that. So like, you could be at a negative, negative operating income if you're an NFL team. That's fine, because you're sitting on so much equity. You're worth $3 billion. Okay, so you're down $5 million for the year. That's pennies. That's 1% of your value. Like, and that's all a tax write-off. So it's like, I don't buy for a second these rumors of like, oh, we couldn't keep Amari Cooper, couldn't keep Khalil Mack, we just didn't have the cash. Bullshit. $3 billion in equity. You can't borrow $20 million. Every bank on planet Earth would lend the Raiders $20 million at like barely any interest, because they're good for it. Like, an NFL franchise isn't going to go bankrupt. Like, someone's going to pick it up. There's a line out the door of the richest people in the world that want to buy NFL franchises at any cost. Like, it's this whole idea like, oh man, they're strapped for cash. Bullshit. They're printing money. It's Fort Knox and all 32 of those NFL teams.
I mean, look, we don't have access to the books. We don't know how they're configuring shit. At the end of the day, if we're going just based purely off of this Forbes article, I guess I might have misspoke somehow, some way. I guess our revenue increased from 2020 to 2021. I don't know how that's possible without stadium ticket revenue. Mm-hmm. And yet still, operating income was negative last year, where it was $33 million in the positive in 2020.
Look at this fucking guy running.
Which seems crazy to me. Yeah. So I don't know. At the end of the day, these are the things I want to know. I want to know jersey sales. Where are we at with jersey sales? Did it spike with Vegas move or no? That would be really good to see. That would kind of gauge fanhood. Yeah. I also am a big believer in the Raiders brand, because I'm born and raised in England. You know, whether it's 80s hip hop or I don't know, man. In England, you'd get T-shirts with the Raiders emblem on it. Mm-hmm. That, you know, back then, no one used to watch the NFL. No one knew what the fuck that was. But it was brand recognition in a completely different part of the world where NFL wasn't even a thing yet.
Yeah.
I didn't see Chief jerseys. I didn't see fucking Broncos jerseys.
NWA wasn't jerseys. NWA wasn't sporting the Colts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I'd love to see what the Raiders brand is worth and what the metrics are behind that. And then honestly, if it fucking impacts our ability to sign players, and it's a problem. If it doesn't, then who gives a fuck? You know what I mean? We're in Vegas.
Yeah. I truly wonder how much equity and branding, like if they could somehow tabulate the dollar amount that like Ice Cube and Snoop Dogg did for the Raiders. Like, I really, really wonder, because like you said, it's like that NWA crew, like that, you know, 90s hip hop West Coast group, like that was international. Like, that was bigger than football. Back then, at least.
Well, dude, the freaking Pistons wore Raiders gear. They didn't even wear the Lions gear. They wore fucking Raiders gear. The bad boy Pistons wore Raiders gear.
We're badass franchise, man. Just gotta, win a little bit.
Well, I couldn't find that shit. I'm looking for it, but whatever. Fuck me. Yeah,
we'll do it next time. It's been a long time. We're at what, 30 episode 39? It's probably episode like four.
Like 30 maybe. Episodes, maybe.
It's the last time we did. This is the last time we did it. But I've dusted off this audio because we're doing it again for the first time in forever.
It's grinders.
Offensive linemen, defensive linemen, special teams players, backups.
But what do you know about Rory's grinders?
I think he's a great dude. I think he's got all the talent in the world.
You can't find me, I'll be the closest one on grinder.
We're dusting it off. Rory, you've heard about Gruen's grinders, but what about Rory's grinders? And Soto, I need you to fix that Raider flag in the back right now. This can't be happening. It fell again. Damn. My God, Soto.
What the fuck?
You might as well just take a dump on the Declaration of Independence while you're at it. Letting the Raider flag fall. This is a terrible sign.
There's not even any wind in there. Like, is there earthquakes or something? Like, what the fuck is going on? Why is it coming down?
You're just using, like, old bubble gum to hold that thing up? This is terrible. Especially, it's week one of preseason. You're going to let that shit happen. Bad form,
Soto.
Bad
Suck
form.
My dick.
Especially during the revival of Rory's grinder.
Fuck Rory's grinders too. How about that?
You don't mean that. I know you don't mean that.
Don't.
All right.
I missed you a little bit.
Take it back.
All right, boys. This is honestly the hardest part of my week. And we kind of mentioned him a little bit earlier on today, but my grinder is without question Gerald McCoy.
Okay.
Let me tell you why. You know, when we sign a guy like Carl Nassib or like, you know, that's a typical Gruden grinder. Mm. You know what I mean? He's overpriced, fairly limited dude, but you're going to get a hustle from him. He also likes his veterans, right? He goes after the dudes that are in, quote unquote, the twilight of their career. And in the past, historically, he tends to get the best out of them. He kind of brings on a little resurgence in them. And sometimes that goes horribly wrong with Jason Witten last year. That's obviously the best fucking example ever.
Yeah.
We all saw that coming. That was fucking dreadful. But Gerald McCoy feels different. Not only because he kind of left, obviously, the big injury last year, and he's 33 years old. We're not expecting fireworks, but I got a feeling that he's still got a little bit of juice in him. And we need that. We need a true pass rusher on the interior. We need a veteran leader. Jonathan Hankins has been fantastic. But, I mean, even if you look at the quotes that are coming out of camp right now, Levi Damien, shout out Levi Damien, he's always doing good shit. Derek Carr said the other day, Gerald McCoy was holding court with the D-line teammates. Eyes were locked in. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. Vic Taffer, again, badass. He quoted Gerald McCoy just saying that he believes our ends can be double-digit sack guys. Nassib can be a 7 to 8 sack guy. A couple of the defensive tackles, north of 5 or 6 sacks. It seems like he's come in. He's taken on a true leadership role. But unlike Witten, we're going to get production. And he might actually improve the group. So I really like the signing.
Well, he's got plenty of competition. Like you said, like every time we start, like we get all these defensive tackles and we start whittling it down, you know, like we'll start letting a couple go and then we'll just sign a couple more. Like it just never ends, which again, that's pretty standard issue. Gus Bradley, competition, every position, you earn that position, not every game, every minute of every practice, you earn that shit on Mondays with a day off. Right. And in with a defense that's got like essentially like no star, like one guy where you're like, okay, this is a dude that's like earned a spot. That's the mentality that should be there.
God, and good. The thing is too, it's like if McCoy is 75% of what he was prior to his injury, that's still a pretty damn good D tackle. Now, Would anyone bat an eye? I like the timing of this signing as well, because you already had a starting defensive tackle on Jonathan Hankins. You already had a guy. So if McCoy is able to say, listen, I can go balls out on the plays that I'm in because I'm going to get a blow. I'm going to get good enough rest where I'm going to be able to go back out there and hit it as hard as I can. Mm-hmm. Maybe I can't hit it as hard as I can, as often as I can when I was in my 20s, RJ. But
sometimes the jokes write themselves, Soto. I don't need to say
anything. I could go out there at in the handful 20 so 25 odd plays that I'm going to play, and I can really go out there and go all out.
Is anyone at all concerned that, and it kind of just hit me now, that Gus Bradley's strategy of just like a ton of motors and a ton of bodies on the defensive line to keep them fresh, a ton of bodies, a ton of motors with the DBs to keep them fresh, could kind of bite us in the ass because we're just using so much of the 53-man roster on defensive tackles that may never see the field and DBs that may never see the field. Like, we don't have any depth at linebacker. Like, I'm just worried that maybe it's like, maybe that's the one, like, I'm just trying to find, like, I'm as optimistic for Gus Bradley as anybody. I'm just wondering if maybe that's kind of like, just Bradley taking loves, up a lot of roster Bradley, spots.
He loves his tweeners. He loves those big safeties that can play linebacker. He likes those ends that kick inside. He likes those guys, and he always finds them. I have no problem with this. I think we're going to see a lot of more tweener action too, as well. If a linebacker gets hurt, Abraham can go in there. If Divine Diablo actually gets healthy, they can go in there. So I think we'll be okay because he does like to shift those guys around in different positions.
I'm not worried about it. I remember, obviously, when we had Khalil Mack. Khalil Mack's a phenom. He's a one-off case, but maybe a guy like Max Crosby, for example. I don't think Max is built to stand up to play every single fucking down. Mm-hmm. I think Max is most effective when him and Cleveland Farrell are splitting time. They're mixing it up. They're getting an opportunity to not necessarily pass rush every single fucking down. You know, if they get the opportunity to use maybe 50% of their moves in a game instead of 100% of their moves, and they come out hot as opposed to come out tired in the fourth quarter, that's a big deal. I feel like if we are going to get after the quarterback, it's because we're able to rotate and keep guys fresh.
I do feel like I can't remember the last Raiders team that did have this kind of depth. You know what I mean? Like, even though, you know, like, again, our defense could just blow again next season. It could be absolutely atrocious again next season. Like, totally, totally possible, right? History would say that it's probably not going to be good again. But goddamn, like, there's just depth at every position now. Like, there's not one position where someone goes down, you're like, okay, no, I'm comfortable with the backup, right? Like, that's other than maybe linebacker, it's kind of shallow, but like every DB position I'm fine with, every offensive line position ish, sort of. Like, you don't want them to go down, but I think we'll be all right. Wide receivers, like any one of our starting wide receivers can go down and someone can fill in for them. I can't remember the last time I said that about a Raiders team.
There's something to be said for trusting the guys around you and for trusting the guys behind you. Mm-hmm. You can go out there and you can be, you don't have to play like Abram did last year and try to do everything yourself, because you know that the guys around you are going to be able to make plays.
Yeah.
And you can go out, you don't have to make business decisions like Joyner did a bunch of times, because, oh, I can't get hurt because then who else is going to play? There's no one behind me. Mm-hmm. You got guys behind you, go out there and you just go full out, go make the play. I think the depth is really going to help.
I think there's still gaps. I always look at the worst case scenarios. It's my job, actually, career world, but it's legitimately, you know, if we lose
professional Debbie Downer,
honestly, looking at the worst case scenarios is life. It sucks.
Yeah.
But, you know, right tackle, if Leatherwood goes down or he sticks it up at the moment, we've got Jared Jones Smith behind him. Obviously Denzel Good could slide over there and John Simpson could fill the guard spot, or Brandon Parker can play both sides.
Brandon fucking Parker.
But you know it, like we saw it last year. We see it every year. On the offense, if there's a question mark, it is the O-line. It's not Colton Miller. It's not Incognito. It's not necessarily Denzel Good. It's Andre James as a starter. It's Leatherwood as a starter. And then if we kind of have injuries in bunches, we had a couple of games where both the first choice and then the second choice went down last year.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's going to tax a lot of teams, but I worry a little bit about our O-line depth, and I worry a bit about honestly, that linebacker core looks good. We got plenty of good linebackers, but strong side of Tanner Muse and Asmar Bilal are the two options. Mm-hmm. You're like, oh shit, okay.
That's what I'm saying. You guys ready to do some what up windbags? Our buddy Ryan Campbell.
Do it.
You're first up. I tell you what gives me nightmares. It's not the mass exodus of broken down veterans and front office people. It's Soto talking about shaving the rainforest between his legs with the lawnmower 3000. Feel like Marlon Brando in Apocalypse Now. The horror, Soto. The horror.
So I want Ryan Campbell. Ryan, God damn it. It's the 4.0, not the 3.0, number one. Number two, I am contractually obligated to talk about my experience with the Manscaped 4.0, which has always been top notch.
I remember when I was editor of Tap Out Magazine like a decade ago, and I was going through old Playboys looking up an old article, and I was like, it's literally in my job description. to read a Playboy right now. This is amazing. Like, this is what I was born to do. This is what you were born to do, Soto. It's now, you are now contractually obligated from your job to talk about your nutsack. Like, this is you finally reading a Playboy on the clock. You finally got where you wanted to be.
And my balls are smooth as eggs.
I find that hard to believe. They're probably chewed up.
Prove me wrong. Prove me wrong, Rory. Anytime.
Hey, that's a text thread thing, not a fucking podcast thing.
Jeff Garrison. Milas is one of the best secondary coaches in the league. The secondary has talent. He has a track record of getting his young players to play up to and beyond their potential talent levels. They'll get it done. And we talked so much about Gus Bradley, but I think the positional coaches, I think we need to probably discuss a little bit more as we go. And Coach Miles definitely, you know, certainly has that reputation. How much is that as him as a great positional coach? How much is that under Gus Bradley's system? I think Gus Bradley, like with that simple system, is so dependent on positional coaches taking off, outstanding players, great defensive line, like we've talked about. And he's just kind of like that rah-rah guy. Here's simple, be yourself. Earlier in the podcast, like last season, we rarely ever talked about positional coaches. Rarely. I think this season, especially on the defense, is worth paying more attention to. Like, other than mentioning Tom Cable all the time, keeping our old line bound together with duct tape and baling wire. Let's keep an eye on how the positional coaches are doing this season. Like, one, you know, with the corner of our eye, watch these guys, running back coach, DB coach, linebacker coach. I think we should.
You know, if you're serving dessert and you're serving vanilla ice cream, it better be a pretty fucking damn good vanilla ice cream to stand alone by itself. If you're going to have a very simple scheme defensively, you better be able to execute it really well. Mm-hmm. And they've done it in the past. He's done it everywhere he's gone. So, and he's had different DB coaches position coaches. So it trickles down from Bradley and what he wants to be taught and the way he wants it to be taught. But yeah, he's going to be a big deal. Miles going out there and making sure that everyone is on the same page, doing the things the right way, the way he wants them done. It's going to be big.
I think this is a really good point. We really haven't spent any time talking about the positional coaches, but they make a difference. Everyone mm-hmm. knows they make a difference. And it seems like, thankfully, Gus Bradley got kind of his ability to sign whoever he wanted. He brought a lot of his homies over. Like Richard Smith came over from the Chargers. I think the only mainstay was Rod Marinelli, right?
Yeah, defensive line.
Which is line coach. That's
the why would you get rid of him?
Yeah.
And, you know, like, hasn't he got a past with Gerald McCoy?
Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I don't know if the years match up, but obviously he's a mainstay. He was kind of the, you know, the Paul Gunther experiment failed and Marinelli took on a bigger role for sure. I love the fact Gus Bradley got to pick whoever he wanted. It kind of stacks the chips in his favor and it eliminates the, the get out clauses. You know, if it doesn't work, then it's on Gus Bradley. He got his guys. He's got his team. I don't want this whole 3-year process to draft his own guys bullshit. We have talent on this team. We've invested a lot of draft capital in the defense. We're expecting results here and now. If we're 32nd on defense again next year, I think Gus Bradley might stay, but again, Gruden's hot seat gets even hotter.
Raider Rich commented, funny you guys think we can't win with Marcus Mariota, but he has playoff wins and DC doesn't. All the while, Mariota is outplaying DC in camp. You know, for one sentence, he somehow managed to get like 7 things wrong. This is actually really impressive. I've never, like,
first off, it's not funny.
It's not funny. Well, so Marcus Mariota 2 seasons ago.
I never said we couldn't win with Mariota either. I said we had a better chance of winning with Carr. That's not saying that you can't win with Mariota. Number 2, please, RJ, I'm sorry.
Remember Marcus Mariota's last season in Tennessee? They had the 5th best defense in football. 5th best defense in football. Couldn't make it to the playoffs.
A young guy named Derrick Henry, toting the rock.
And they still couldn't go to the playoffs with that good of a defense. What a waste. Raiders would be like back-to-back-to-back Super Bowl champions with the 5th best defense in football. Like this, like, and Mariota couldn't get shit done.
Yeah, it's like I get buried every single day because, oh, you're blaming Carr. Everything on Carr and this and that. And now he's like, well, yeah, Carr can't win. I'm like, dude, I admit that the defense is a major issue with the Raiders.
We really should start burying you for not being able to keep your Raider flag up in the background. That should be the new thing that we bury you with.
Fuck that flag. Flag's staying down.
It's fucked up, dog.
Fuck that thing.
And what is this Mariota outplaying DC in camp? Like, every single story from camp is how many interceptions Mariota is throwing.
Apparently, Raider Rich has been right there. Fucking hide behind the goalposts and shit, fucking making sure you can see everything.
Yeah, I mean, there's a good argument against Carr, but I don't know if it's Mariota. Straight up.
This is the most Marcus Mariota has ever been discussed on a podcast in years. He got a lot of love today.
Outside of Hawaii and Oregon, right?
Right. Only places.
Well, he ain't going nowhere because it looks like Carson Wentz is going to be ready for week one from all accounts.
Yeah, which is a shame. I would have liked to have had get some capital for Mariota. But I'll take the best backup in football. Best backup quarterback in football.
I don't know that we're.
Think so?
I don't know that
who's better?
Taysom Hill. You think?
I don't know if we're afforded that luxury.
I don't know
if that good of a backup quarterback.
Yeah. Well, $3.5 million? That's fine. Fuck, we give Nathan Peterman $1 million every year. We can't do $2.5 million more for the best backup of. I think I'd take Mariota over Taysom Hill.
I mean, so there's a lot of like muddy quarterback situations. I think you guys mentioned it last week or the week before, yeah. But you know, like whoever loses out in Chicago
might be better.
49ers.
Honestly, 49ers. Again, I'll say there is no one more lethal in the NFL than Ryan Fitzpatrick on a 1-year deal. I mean, I don't give a fuck how old
he is. Like, thick dick motherfucker, dude. You know what? The who was it? It was Marcus, right? Who was saying that? Oh yeah, Fitzpatrick. They don't have anybody in Washington because we're talking about playing the NFC East. Like, dude, yeah. We had our problems against Miami when Fitzy was in the game. We didn't have no problem with Tua. We had problems with Fitzy. That's who gave us the shit.
Yeah, Fitzy and his 180 degree spinning head. Last drive of the game.
That motherfucker. God damn him.
All right, well, Rory, this was quite a pleasure. Glad you got very, very excited to join us for preseason. Maybe we'll get you on a little bit more often. But until that day arrives, knock on wood if you're with me. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Make sure you go to manscaped.com using promo code WINBAGS for 20% off and free shipping worldwide. Also, make sure that you check us out on YouTube. Follow us there. As well, a lot of extra content, and then you get to see us, which is always fun. Until next time, later.